Welcome back to another episode of This Modern Brand, the podcast where we pull the curtain back on some of America's most influential brands to break down their strategies, values, and innovations. I'm your host, Jason Parks. Today, we're talking about all things influencer, and we have for you a panel of experts. Let's welcome to the pod. I have Jane Chandler. She's the Vice President of Influencer Relations here at Barclay OKRP. Say hey, Jane.
Hey. Hey, Jason.
Got Joe Spencer, who's an account supervisor at Barclay OKRP, who focuses a lot in influencer space. Hey, Joe.
Hello, hello.
And we have Pam Davis, founder of Likekind, which is an influencer marketing agency. Hey, Pam.
Hey, hey.
Let's dig in. So talk to me a little bit about this mysterious influencer space. You know, specifically, first of all, share your thoughts at the 500,000 foot level, just the state of influencer relations. And I'll start with Jane here.
Sure. We are talking a lot about influencer versus creator, I feel like, right now. And at the end of the day, it becomes a title. So I'll just start with that. When we're talking influencers, we're talking creators, we're talking any platform where really someone is there that is creating content that can inspire an action is what I would consider an influencer. So no limitation on followers, no max on followers. So just to set the stage there. And then in my world state of influencer, I am getting all the calls of, gosh, we've tried influencer and it bombed, or this is so hard. We feel stuck. We're giving up. So a lot of the conversation I am having is, influencers, creators are still on the platforms. They are still creating purchases. They are still creating engagement and action. Just because it is becoming more of a business and requiring more strategic thinking, that should allow for more creativity and excitement. It shouldn't scare you. If you're scared, though, you know, that's why we're here today. That's why Pam is here. That's why Joe and I are here every day. But don't be scared. Be inspired.
Yeah, no, it's a very interesting time in the influencer space. Like you said, anyone who's an influencer, that we say influencer, creators, talking about Redditors, YouTubers, podcasters, everyone in those spaces, it's always great. I find it very interesting right now in the sphere of influence. Right now, I see a kind of a divergent path in the woods, and it's people who are going more towards entertainment value creator and people who are going more towards that TikTok shop.
Yes,
the more like
so
buying
true.
And selling things.
Yes.
And so I think we're starting to see that kind of get more split down the road, and I'm interested to see where it goes, if it comes back, because there are people who are still definitely towing the line between the two, as opposed to these people who are just selling stuff on TikTok shop to get that little bit of ching.
Work in the platform versus work in the community, maybe.
Yeah.
Go in the community, work in the platform. That's a really good point. Pam,
yeah, and I
hear you.
I too see everything in my feed. It's all about entertaining people versus selling products. Mm-hmm. It's people want to be entertained at this point. So if you can entertain them and sell a product or promote a brand at the same time, that's the winning combination. It's like, I think we're all pretty sick of like, oh, great, here comes another story. They're trying to sell a toothbrush to me. I don't think I'm going to click on the link. I'm going to pass through. If you can entertain, I think you have a much higher probability of selling the products and hitting those brand goals for sure.
So talk to me a little bit. That's interesting. So talk to me about, how do you identify the right influencers for a campaign? So, you know, you've got a spectrum of the micro influencers to all the way to the big celebrities is one way to think about it. So what factors do you look at when making this decision on behalf of a brand or a product?
If you've been around our agency, you've probably heard this soapbox before. It is a really good question, and one that comes down like any other tactic in what we're doing, the objective. So I think we can really boil it down, not to oversimplify it, but down to a content versus an awareness objective. And then what are you looking for? What are your goals of the work? We're not, this is a strategic place to play. Mm-hmm. And we're utilizing influencers at times as a production studio or as a media channel to reach the audience, as a third party endorsement channel, like a PR channel. So it's combining all of those and then deciding based on the objective of what you're trying to accomplish as your brand, who that person is. Some of it could be based on, of course, then budget or anything else. But are we looking, to Joe's point, to sell something, or are we looking to educate with what Pam was mentioning, because those are two different creators. Mm-hmm. One other thing that we bring to the table that I always want to make sure we bring up is data. So as much as there's the creativity and making sure we're taking a really creator first approach, I'm sure we'll talk about that more today. But using data to ensure that the influencers that you're working with not only are your target audience, but that the people that they're reaching are a part of your target audience. So we want to make sure that when we're finding that right influencer, not only does it make sense for the campaign, it doesn't scream ad, but that it also was going to reach our target audience. So that is an important piece of it too, I would say.
Yeah, just to bounce off that, I think the biggest thing is there's no one way to work with an influencer. Uh-huh. There's no one way to sell a product. There's no one way to create buzz around a certain activation or some kind of initiative that we're doing. There's so many ways to do it, and it's really good to get creative and pull in some of your creative partners. I know that I work on accounts from varying degrees of integration across the agency, and so there are certain times where I need to like pull in my social, I need to pull in my paid people, and like kind of go and use our tools there and really build out the best possible way to work and move forward.
When you consider there are millions, billions of people on TikTok that you are narrowing down from to select the right person to represent your brand, it can be overwhelming or it can be a great opportunity. And so it's being really smart about that criteria you lay to find that right person.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think from my perspective, from an agency perspective, when a brand reaches out and we're trying to find the right fit from my roster, who would best perform for the brand, I really want to understand what are the goals. Is it brand awareness? Is it sales? Do you want to entertain? Do you want to educate? Are you looking for a certain style of content, a certain style of creator? Help me understand what are the demographics? Who are you trying to target? So a lot goes into that. And sometimes we might not even have that influencer that they're actually looking for or that they need. And that's something that we would want to be totally straightforward and honest about, because we want to build those brand relationships.
So that's a perfect bridge into, talk to me about some of the common challenges you face when executing influencer marketing campaigns, and how do you overcome them? So you got to find the right influencer first, right?
Like that's the right influencer. Yeah. And then is that just pulled from my starter of, oh no, people say it can be hard, right? I'm going to let someone else speak to that. Pam's like, oh yeah, it can be hard.
I think some of the common challenges are, you know, everybody talks about the Instagram algorithm and, oh, the algorithm wasn't in my favor today and my views didn't hit or my clicks didn't hit, or there's a variety of things. So we definitely see that as a challenge from our end. When, you know, a brand is focused on sales and we're not able to get there, and they've now paid the creator a certain amount of money because they are expecting a certain return. Other common challenges would be just creators not getting their content turned on time. And there's different things that will happen throughout a campaign that can be a challenge. But from my perspective, I think it's the challenges of making sure they're getting the eyeballs on their content and it's what the brand has paid for and what they're expecting. I think that's my biggest common challenge.
Yeah, and I think from my perspective, one of my common challenges is just education, educating the clients, educating new creators, because there are some that pop off overnight and they've never done this before. And I have to kind of walk them through it and be like, okay, I'm going to send you a contract now. Next comes the brief, that kind of thing. But also on the client side, understanding that this is not a direct advertisement. This isn't a direct sales. This isn't going to go up on TV and get like OTV, OLV, what have you. This is content that people are wanting to see and react to from their favorite creators. And it's in our best interest to utilize their style, how they're doing things, how they would sell this product, how they would incorporate this product into it. Like I say, there are exceptions to every rule, but nothing viral ever came from a scripted brief, like at all.
How do you balance that though? Because that's a good point. Like, so you've got the authentic way that the creator tells their stories, mm-hmm. but you do have some brand things that you're obviously wanting to get across. So what, give me some examples how you try to balance that.
Yeah, I think there are just certain, obviously some concessions made. Like I said, there's exceptions to every rule, but I think it's really just helping the client understand why this is going, where this is going in the sense of the content and where it goes in. And honestly, connecting those dots, sometimes having that conversation between the influencer and the client and bringing them into one room is really helpful, because I can play middleman and really like get those back and forths going. But at the end of the day, I'm not going to be able to sell JoJo Siwa on JoJo Siwa. I mean, maybe I could now, but
I could never sell
JoJo Siwa the way JoJo Siwa sells herself.
Totally.
And I think it's really showing that and coming prepared with a lot of things. I know that for us, we make sure to like either go through a review, and like when we're going through influencers and criteria and all that, we have all of it linked down, and we're like, we would want them to do something like this, something in this vein, making sure that the client truly understands like what our vision is, why we chose this person, how we narrowed it down to here, and just walking them through it. But like I said, sometimes it's just getting them in a room together to help understand the story together.
Well, the larger message, yeah, I totally agree. And the larger message of being in the room together is the foundation of really successful influencer marketing, which is co-creating content, right? We really are trying to bring the brand. And the amazing thing about creators is they can connect your brand to culture instantly. And they are the experts at it. That's what's amazing, is that we're partnering with them. They are an expert at their channel. They are an expert with their audience. They consistently receive these high views. We know how hard that is. So it kind of goes back to the challenge, but it's also an inspirational challenge in some ways. But it is continuing to put co-creation at the forefront, I think, of every conversation. So we have creatives on our, we are very lucky to have creatives on our team, and we work together to create what that brief is. And then we work together with the influencer to talk about what that looks like from both ends. It's never just the influencer creating, but it's also never us scripting for the influencer. It has to meet in the middle.
You've all been in this space for a while, right? So...
A little bit.
So two-part question for each of you, and I'm going to start with you, Pam. What is the most proud, like the proudest moment you've had? It can be an example in the space. And what's the biggest mistake the biggest mistake that you've run into in your career in influencer marketing?
Oh, I love this question. I think one of the proudest moments would be landing a dream partnership for one of my top talent after I have been reaching out to the brand, and she's been doing organic content for them, and we've been trying to like wave our red flag, like, hey, we're over here, we really want to partner with you, we're doing all of these different things. And to land the dream partnership, I definitely think that was a super, super proud moment. I also think owning my own agency for 3 years, and you know, every single day is different and wild, and you never know what's coming at you. And so I'm also super proud of that. I think one of those moments where it's like, oh my gosh, I feel so horrified, is when, you know, one of my talent managers makes a mistake and doesn't read an exclusivity clause or something like that. And then we've got a little bit of an issue with two different brands. And that actually happened between Jane and I. And so we had to hop on a call and talk it through. And so I would say for the most part, there's a lot of wins overall, and this is like an incredible industry to be in, but there is never a dull moment, and that's, I think, what I like best about this.
I think that's why we all like it, right? And she's totally right, but that's why Pam and I have a great working relationship now after those 11 p.m. phone calls for a few nights helping us out. And we have more respect, I think, than ever as a working teams now, and we work with more of your creators because of that. Influencer marketing is not easy, and at the center of it is humans. So any mistake even that we're talking about is an awesome learning opportunity for the next thing, as we were building our influencer plane as the entire industry was also building it. So, and the same with your business. So I want to keep hearing the stories. I'm so sorry to interrupt, but I do think it's really interesting to hear how it continues to evolve what we're working on too.
So what's your story?
Oh gosh.
Proudest and biggest mistake. Well, Joe's. Yeah.
I do have a pretty big gap that Joe had to solve on my maternity leave. When same vibe, Pam. I did not complete a contract very well, and I can't say the name. Sorry, because it's a big name. And
I forgot about it.
It was in front of like our big campaign coming that summer, and it was like a few days before. And wouldn't you know, the contract's not done. He has a new agent. He or she, he has a new agent, and it all, they don't agree with anything anymore. And I'm like, I have a 2-day-old. Bye. I'm so sorry. Yeah,
we were like in 23rd rounds of revisions on that contract, certain wording here and there, just trying to. And then at one point they thought that they were executing the contract and we were like, no, we're executing the contract. It was a whole fun thing. But I forgot about that one.
That was a good one.
That wasn't even mine.
Oh, that's OK. I would say good other lessons are fun things like if you work with creators in Vegas who like to go out, make sure their content is up before 11 p.m. because you will be on the phone at 4 a.m. working on getting that TikTok video up and fixed. The hours are just different depending on where you are. So that was a mistake I learned just for my own personal sanity as well. And then proud moment. I love when we get a months later after we've seen that piece of paper and we just, oh my gosh, how are we ever going to do this? It is not possible. And we've just completed one of those projects with a large, large, large amount of influencers making a ton of content, very, very hands-on, very specific, very sales targeted. And it's come together and we actually blew the results and the goals out of the water when we really at first thought like, oh my gosh, what have we gotten ourselves into? So I love those moments of triumph and you have to like pause and hold them. Otherwise, they will quickly slip away and then you're on to the next thing. So it's those little moments of, oh my gosh, we did it that are my favorite and that have you come in every day to do the next one.
Yeah, no. I would say my biggest mistake was earlier on in my career, before we really knew anything about like influencer land or anything. Now, knowing what I know now, luckily nothing bad really came of this. But I used to work at a luxury travel agency or travel publicity agency, and we would just give people trips for free with no contract in place, no dollar amount in place. We would send them a fact sheet and a dream and just let them go. And it was, I don't know. It like I said, we were very lucky that nothing poorly came out of it, but it was a lot of me going back to the influencers and being like, "Hey, you spelled Ka'ana Poly Beach wrong. You need to go back and fix it. Hey, you didn't put this in here. You need to go back and fix that because we didn't have a contract in place, because we didn't have a brief in place. We had nothing." Like I said, just sent them on a trip with a dream and a fact sheet and said, have fun.
And your own dream that they would post.
But they did. I mean, it was stories throughout the whole thing. Look at that. It was great. I mean, it was nice being able to leverage a luxury vacation as payment, but
that'll do it.
But my proudest moment would probably be last year for a certain activation. The client definitely wanted to make sure that our group of influencers was diverse, and making sure, and I'd say this for all influencer work, you want to make sure that there is a good amount of diversity, but with the caveat of never tokenizing people and never like really putting that in, because we do see that with, you know, the Pepsi ads and all that fun stuff. But my proudest moment was really going into an event and hosting it and having these beautiful creators go live and all this stuff. And then one, having the host of the event basically be like, this is so amazing. This is great. I haven't seen an event put on like this before. And this is the standard of how these should go. And then two, having smaller creators see that event and then post stories about it saying, this is what it's supposed to look like. This is what we're supposed to see. And giving a voice to some people of color who don't necessarily have very large followings, but knowing that they still have a place in these spaces and making sure that they feel welcome and making sure that everyone can come together. And then, I mean, this person, they weren't on the trip. They didn't go. They weren't invited, like nothing, but they saw this event and were just like, this is so inspiring. And I was like texting Jane crying in the bathroom after the event. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe it. Like people, it actually is impactful work.
I remember that. I can't believe I forgot to say it myself. I would have stolen it, but it was your work. So I'm glad you said it. And I also was pretty teared up at Target. I remember core memory when you were sending that and the trip was going. And it's really, I mean, it's something that we do really pride ourselves on, is making sure. And I was going to say, and Pam was on this trip, actually, if she knows what we're talking about, maybe. Yeah.
Well, speaking of impactful work. Go ahead, Pam.
Oh, I was just going to say, yes. I mean, what they put together was absolutely incredible, and I got to be on that trip and experience it firsthand. So what Barkley does is pretty amazing, I have to say.
Also, props to Pam as a manager. Seriously. She's the only one who somebody was like, can I bring my manager? You, only one invited.
Please.
Only one who invited. Oh, you were the only person an influencer invited their manager for.
That's and how you know it, Pam is cool.
Yeah. We were like, sure, great, bring her. And now here we are.
From cool. From cool to hardcore ROI. How do you measure the effectiveness of influencer marketing campaigns?
Good question. Who wants to take that? Sorry.
I mean, I guess I can start.
Sure.
I would say, honestly, with ROI, it definitely comes down to, again, what we're trying to do, what we're trying to achieve, and really get down to things. With influencer work, I will say it is quick. It is moving fast. Normally it's not more than just like a little bit of a flash in the pan. So definitely not building in multiple CTAs into influencer work, multiple levels of if you do this, then you get to do this. Not having, okay, well, we need to go to this microsite in order to do this. So we're really garnering in on one key ROI deliverable and how we think that'll be. That could be a promo code. That could be just a UTM. That could be something as simple as just impressions, like how many people saw it. Is awareness your goal? Then that is a good ROI. If you have 1 million impressions, that's a good ROI. But if you're if your main goal is to sell product and you have 1 million impressions but no clicks, then I don't know. It kind of just goes into what we are trying to do and how we want to do it. There's 1 million ways, and I think that we can get really creative, and we have been having to get really creative recently, especially with things like the TikTok shop and things like that.
I agree. And just like any other tactic, we're trying to show the other value to influencer besides those media metrics you might see on a slide, like impressions or engagements. We definitely want to report on that, and that's incredibly important, mm-hmm. and it shows the success of that specific video. What we also want to show is the larger impact of our investment in this person. So even, for example, we report on brand love, which we call unprompted, uncontracted endorsement. So when we develop an awesome relationship with an influencer, what we see is that influencer really loves the brand and is posting about us without us even asking. So we find on our accounts, by really investing in the relationship and building that co-create mindset and a process that works for both parties, we get more content than we ever even ask for. And in fact, in a lot of our clients that really allow those long-term relationships and allow us that space to create, we see that we get double the deliverables for the same price that we came in at. So we see brand love coming and regularly. So that is where, you know, we can check the box on objectives all day, but we're also trying to show that value of that third-party endorsement.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important what you touched on there is that long-term partnership. Those definitely are proving very beneficial. And I like to liken influencer work to more of a long-term relationship, long-term dating, as opposed to more advertising, where that's more of a one-night stand. You put your money in, you get your impressions out, and that's the end of it all. But with influencers, you kind of like get them going a little. You got to kind of have them stroke their ego a little, but definitely building that relationship and forming that bond that can get to where you can ask the client, be like, hey, can we send this influencer these surprise and delight kits for whatever, or if we're working on some other thing and they're like, hey, we have extras of these, could we send these to our influencers? And like finding those moments of where we can really build that together.
Hey, Pam, I need you to get out your crystal ball and tell me, how do you foresee influencer marketing evolving in the future?
I think it's just going to continue to go up. I don't know what other form of marketing is going to come in. And, you know, with AI and everything like that, it is kind of hard with my crystal ball to see super clearly. But it's the new way of the world. I mean, I don't know how else we're going to market to people so directly and be able to look at their demographics and go, okay, I'm looking for women 24 to 32 and really hone in and find those influencers that align with those demographics. I see a lot more creators coming onto the scene, and I see basically every single brand out there figuring out some type of influencer marketing strategy mm-hmm. in order to survive and grow their businesses. That's what I'm seeing in the future.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, because a lot of kids nowadays, people say, what do you want to be when you grow up? And they say, I want to be an influencer. And you're just like,
they do.
And it's I hear it. I see it. And you can see some of these teenagers just like, just trying. It's funny because there's this one person who asked me, just a stranger asked me for advice, and they were like, could you tell me? And I was like, well, don't say aspiring influencer in your bio. First things first.
Otherwise, though, we're all just jealous.
Joe, Jane, Pam, thanks so much for the conversation today. It was absolutely eye-opening, fantastic conversation. And that's going to wrap up this episode of This Modern Brand, a podcast by Barclay OKRP. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Amazon Music. For more stories and insights on how to build brands people love, visit us at barclayokrp.com. I'm Jason Parks. Thanks for listening.